As is always the case with our readings, there's a lot that could be said about these today. They're a little complicated to explain. So perhaps I'll try and pick maybe one angle or thread, perhaps, that picks up the gospel and our first reading. They are presented as a pair to us today, as they often are on our ordinary time Sundays. And I guess the angle might be something like this. It is the invitation for all of us as followers of the Lord Jesus, all of us as Christians, to view the world with an expansive lens and not to think of things narrowly or constrictively, but to have a broad concept of all the possibilities of divine grace that can pour out into the world if we allow the Lord's vision to break through and to expand our often very narrow horizons, our very small conceptions. That might be what's happening in these readings. How do I mean that? And to get at it, maybe a little context might be helpful. In the case of the gospel, to again take a complicated reading and quickly try and summarize it, what is laid bare here are the divisions within the Jewish community around the time that Jesus comes among us. As is the case in, I suppose, every era, there are camps and different opinions about theology and God and salvation. And Jesus did battle with each of these camps in his own different ways. And in this particular gospel, the Lord is nearing probably the end of his life. He's getting close to the end of his preaching time, and he's in Jerusalem, quite likely. And what happens? The Sadducees challenge him. Who are the Sadducees? Well, as Luke explains, and as historians have pretty much agreed with, they are a narrower group within Judaism that did not believe in the afterlife, that there's no resurrection from the dead. And lest we pick on them for that, the fact is that the idea of an afterlife was pretty new to Judaism by the time that Jesus came among us. For most of Jewish history, this life was all that there was. And the idea that there was a resurrection and that there were angels, which the Sadducees also denied, that really is only maybe a couple hundred years before Christ came among us in its existence. So pretty new for them to think about something like a heaven. The Sadducees were the one camp that hung on to the idea there was not one. They were very conservative in their theological outlook that way. So if you understand that as a concept, if there's no afterlife, if there's no resurrection, then you tend to overemphasize certain other things about this life for good reasons, but there's a distortion that creeps in. And the distortion that the Sadducees mention and the Lord challenges goes like this: if there's no afterlife, then in this life you must produce children, because that's how you lived on. You lived on in your kids. Hence the long-standing Jewish idea that if a person was childless, they were somehow cursed by God. There was no immortality to their family. And how important for a group of people who rely on bloodlines for salvation to produce more children, you see. So for the Sadducees, they set up this little trick for the Lord and say, well, if there's a resurrection, what about this part of Moses' law? Because Moses said, if so-and-so doesn't have any children, then they must marry until they produce them, because that's what really matters, right? So in their example, well, someone had seven husbands. So in your afterlife, Jesus, who is she married to? So what does Jesus do in the face of this criticism? Well, he does, I guess what I'm trying to say at the beginning, he says, he sweeps it aside saying, your vision is far too narrow. You don't understand the power of God nor the scriptures. And rather than being put into your box, Jesus says, I'll just remind you what you should have known all along. We speak about Moses as being the God of Abraham and Isaac and his ancestors. In other words, there's already proof that God is a God of all generations, of the living and the dead, that there is an afterlife. And he would say to them in further discourses, your legalism, your narrow categories, your inability to think with an expansive vision is keeping you from understanding the promises of God and the promises of grace and the power that can work in this world. Your legalism, your narrow view, is making you overemphasize something to its distortion. So he says to them, you're going to overemphasize things, the wrong things, because your vision is, it's off. It's a subtle point that I'm making here, and the Lord is too, but it's an important one. So overemphasizing certain things happens when our vision is distorted. That would be one lesson. First reading, kind of the same. We overemphasize certain things if our vision is off. In the case of the first reading, perhaps even harder to explain, but goes kind of like this in a nutshell. Here, we see the narrowness of vision on the part of some occupying powers of the Jewish people, and the expansiveness of vision on the part of the average everyday faithful. They had broad eyes to see. And how does that play out in the reading? About maybe three centuries before Christ came among us, a new occupying power rolled into the Jewish territories. They had a whole bunch of them over their history, and this was yet another one. This was the Greeks. And as the Greeks came in with Alexander's great conquest, what began to happen is that they introduced their own particular customs, many of which ran headlong into the Jewish customs. And so, as the time passed, some Jews were being asked to eat pork, which at that point in Jewish life you didn't do, to participate in Greek games, which were often kind of vulgar and unclean, to worship Greek gods, perhaps. These defilements were creeping into the Jewish territories and were being forced on them under Greek government. In our story today from 2 Maccabees, a group of people about 150 years before Christ comes decide they're going to revolt and say, we'll have no more of this. Doesn't matter what your government says, what this particular current occupying power wants us to do. We know that God's laws are higher, and as this reading points out, we are so confident in the life to come, in the resurrection, in the afterlife, in God's expansive power to rule over this world and the next, that we don't really care if you martyr us for disobeying your Greek laws. You can cut off our tongues and cut off our hands if you want to. We will live forever, and you will not. Is the king moved by this? No, he kills them anyway, but history clearly vindicates the martyrs in this case. So what has happened? The Greeks have overemphasized their laws. They have a very narrow vision of their sense of power and what people can and cannot do. And the expansive vision, which is made possible by a belief in the world to come, the resurrection, the full view, in the end, it does win out. The Maccabeans, the ones revolting, they do change the culture, and they make a real difference in the course of Judaism all the way until Christ comes and makes his own beautiful reform movements that become Christianity. So it's a complicated set of readings, right? But the point is the same in each one. It's a subtle one. Again, if we are not expansive enough with our vision, proper enough with our context, then we will overemphasize certain things, and harm begins to creep in as a result. What might be a contemporary example? How do you bring this home, right? I could think of a couple. For one, maybe in our personal lives, we can ask ourselves the question, do I really believe in the afterlife and the world to come? And if so, how does it affect what I treat things like in this life, my material possessions, my sources of security? One thing, in our world right now, in our culture, we overemphasize health and fitness because we think that this life is all that there is. For as much as we intellectually claim to believe in heaven, the fact is if we really believed in it, we wouldn't be so worried about this life coming to an end. But we are hyper-paranoid about the body. We're overemphasizing a good thing because of the distortion in our own lens. We don't really believe in the afterlife, frankly, as strong as we think, because if we did, we wouldn't be so health-obsessed in our own day and age. Is health a good thing? Yes. Is it overemphasized? Yes. And distortions creep in. In a reversal, an odd reversal of the idea of having kids for immortality today, we overemphasize the value of not having kids, of having small families, because we overemphasize possessions and wealth and material things in this life. So we almost have the reverse problem of the Sadducees. But again, when that distortion comes in, the culture shifts, and before long, we have a generation that can't support the one that came before it. And our institutions all begin to shrink because there's not enough kids anymore to support this vast infrastructure called America. So those distortions have consequences for the way things play out. Which I guess brings me to my last example. And again, the connection is important, and it's a subtle distinction I'm about to make here. And the example has to do with the election happening on Tuesday. And again, what I offer you this morning, I hope that you'll take it as a bit of a correction of perspective, if I can put it that way, and as a subtle point, but I do think it needs to be made. I have thought long and hard about this electoral process this year, and many of you have as well. You've told me so, which I appreciate. And up to this point, I've not said a whole lot about it because, well, what does one say exactly? But I can say this today in light of the theme of the readings. The election process has played out, and the fighting and the bickering, and the fact that we've raised up two manifestly unfit candidates for president from a Catholic perspective. I personally cannot vote for either one of them and stand before God and say that I did, so I will not be. But the fact that this has happened tells me and tells us something interesting about our culture these days, if we're paying attention. And it goes like this. We have overemphasized something that is good. We place so much value on it that it's distorting the rest of the system, like the Sadducees did, or like those Greek governors did. And the overemphasis goes like this. We have placed far too much faith in government, and far too much faith in a process, and far too much faith in things that are simply man-made systems that will one day pass away. Think about how much rides on elections now, because unlike decades ago, the government controls every little facet of all of our daily lives. From womb to tomb, everything that we do is impacted by regulation upon regulation, etc., which means that we have decided that the solution to all of our problems isn't within our hearts, and not becoming better citizens or persons is to cast it on the system. They should do this. That should happen. Those people out there, the elected ones, someone in the White House, someone on the Supreme Court, someone in Congress, we have decided that they are the answer to all of our problems. That's a distortion. That is taking politics itself and a government system, which is a good thing and a helpful thing and necessary thing, and overemphasizing it to making it something divine and something eternal and far more powerful than it actually needs to be. And when that happens, then what happens is that frustrations grow and discontentment spreads, and elections begin to lose their power to solve any problem because no matter who is in office, they can't possibly live up to all that's being placed upon them by our restless electorate that's decided that I'm not the problem, somebody else must be. But that's not how cultures are supposed to run that want to last anyway. So what does the Christian say in the face of all of this? What's the Catholic response to this? We would say, you know, the vision right now is too narrow. It needs to be expanded. We need to think about broad things, about the world to come, about God's divine power, and about how he's inviting us to be good examples of kindness and justice and truth and integrity in a process that is really broken down. And we would say, like those Maccabees did to the Greeks, it doesn't matter what laws you enact or who's sitting in power, because you're going to come and you're going to go. I believe in an eternal law. I'm a Christian. I will not get pegged into a narrow category of left, right, Republican, Democrat, Trump, Clinton. They are too narrow, and they don't work. It breaks down because our view has become distorted. For Americans, this is a hard thing to hear because we are raised in the American religion that the Constitution is divine, that the democratic process is the best thing ever invented, that the president is some sort of a savior, that Congress can fix all of our problems. None of those things are true. They're not true. The Constitution is important, but it's not divinely inspired. It will one day go. And whoever's in the Oval Office or the Supreme Court only matters on one level just a little bit in light of God's much broader sweep of history and the command that he has over human hearts. And the reality, too, my friends, is that if we think that this is all going to be over with on Tuesday, then we are mistaken. Tuesday will solve very, very little, because all of the confusion and frustration and chaos and corruption in this process is simply a mirror of the culture itself. And the culture won't be changed on Wednesday morning. It'll be the same as it is today and tomorrow and Tuesday. And whoever gets elected on Tuesday, half the country cannot stand them. So they will not be able to govern effectively, no matter who they are. Have no illusions about that. So what must change is our hearts. And the Christians are the ones to do it because we have an understanding, like few others have, of who is law supreme, of what justice is, what human dignity is, what authentic love is. We are the ones, 77 million of us Catholics, who could say to the country, I don't want either one of these two. I want to go a different way. And we have to recognize the limitations of our system that we're placing too much power in. The reality is, you know, my friends, that rulers are going to come and they're going to go. So it's just an election. It's only an election. It will have consequences for sure. It will make the life of the church harder for sure, no matter who gets elected on Tuesday, but it is only in the end an election. And we have to understand that. So our answer is, my vision is broader. My viewpoint is deeper. My vocation is higher. Our calling is stronger and deeper than anything that we deal with in our current political catastrophe. The American system is one system of government among many, and its greatest strength is also its greatest weakness. It depends heavily upon a body of people who are intelligent, moral, virtue-driven, and well-formed. And when that falls apart, everything else crashes with it. That is its greatest weakness. So the remedy has to be us living better. And not saying it's someone else out there. No, it's us right here in our hearts who must be the better people. So voting is a tiny, insignificant act compared to the millions of other decisions we make as citizens every single day. In light of the Sadducees, in light of the Lord, in light of the Maccabees, I simply say to you and to all of us, some perspective is radically in order in this situation. The election isn't God. Only God is God. And no matter what happens on Tuesday, and it will make problems no matter what, God will sort it out, and his will be done. And we'll be the ones to say, we walk forward in the grace of the Lord, confident that no matter what happens in Washington, like those Maccabees, we believe in the life to come, and we are stronger than whatever you toss at us. We're people of tomorrow and of the Lord and not of the passing whims of the present that gets overemphasized to the detriment of cultures and peoples. My hope, friends, is that this week, therefore, will be calm, peaceful, ordered, just people, loving people, people of conviction of the things that matter the deepest, while everything else comes and goes in God's eternal kingdom.